You're listening to The Purple Mystic, a podcast for the modern witch, with your host, Natalie Sedgwick. Welcome back to the Purple Mystic Podcast for the Modern Witch. Today, I have the pleasure of talking with Miss Stephanie Taylor Gramasi. Good afternoon, Stephanie. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Natalie. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on your show. I'm excited
to get to talk to you. This is like a bomb.
So. A bomb of glitter and confetti.
Hey, that works. That is magic. Absolutely. Glitter is the most magical thing because it just totally transforms your entire ideal. I always wear a little bit of glitter on my eyes and my girls are like, Mom, don't you think it shut? I'm not too old for that.
That's right.
Don't even ask that question.
I wore some last night. So no, you're never too old for glitter.
Never too old for glitter. Got to be the glamour. So Miss Stephanie, talk to us a little bit about House of Gramasi and where you are now with that. What's going on with you?
Things have kind of shifted for me in the last 6 months, I would say, after Raven's passing. It's been, a process of going through the grieving stages. And interestingly enough, they actually do exist, the stages that they talk about, although I never got to the anger stage because I just didn't feel that or resentment or anything. It was just kind of like, missing and then, just different parts of our lives that kind of waned away. And I finally had this big shift in energy where I realized that it was no longer us, that it's me. And that kind of pushed me into stepping out into my new life. And so I'm designing that right now. And it's very serendipitous that you had me on today because it's actually Raven's birthday, April 12th. Mm-hmm. And I had decided that this big project that I've been working on and creating and designing, that I'm going to be launching it today on his birthday.
That is awesome news. Yeah. I know that must have been a devastating loss. It was certainly a loss for the community, but you yourself have got a lot to offer the community as well. And I think sometimes when you're with someone who has the kind of influence that Raven had, your abilities kind of get shot in the fray a little. So it's exciting to see that you're coming out and continuing the House of Gramasi Stephanie style. So I know that you were on Ashley Cruz's video and it was good to see you appear there. It was very exciting to see the different traditions coming together in her video. Yeah. And you look fantastic.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate your kind words too, by the way, that, people will find, I hope, value in what I can bring to the community too. And it just being my voice. I admit my voice is different than Raven's. I've always kind of felt that him being the educated, well-read occultist, as well as witch, teacher, and author, that he really brought about those kinds of energies to it, the magic, the mechanism behind, the craft and magic and mystery themes, the mystery tradition themes. And I bring a different viewpoint, which is really more about the spiritual heart of the witch, because that's where I'm at. I really feel that your development, your evolution is really, it's heart related, balanced by power and wisdom.
Right.
So bringing those together in the heart is a very important element of really your ability to participate in your life. And so that's really kind of where I come from.
Well, and I would agree with you because we are a system, right? We are not just one part. We're not just technique and tradition, and we're heart and spirit as well. And it's the melding. And I think that's what made the two of you complement each other so well. I used to love listening to your podcast, and I have to admit, I kind of hope you'll continue your podcast on your own, because it was a bit of an inspiration for me to start the podcast.
Oh, thank you.
You guys got us through the first part of the pandemic. Oh, wow. I was like, I'm going nuts over here. I need people and community. And oh my God. So I started listening into the podcast, and I said, you know, I just enjoyed listening to you guys so much and talking about, you know, how the series you did, the two-part series where Raven talked about how he grew up and so on and so forth. And I was going, gosh, I used to do some of those things myself. And then how you guys met and how you have carried on and done some things. So it was really neat. And I'm hoping that you'll continue that podcast so we can continue to share with you that you're going to bring forward into the community on your own. And I was going to ask, are you still leading the Ash, Birch, and Willow tradition? What's your plans for that?
Oh, yeah. I'm wearing the mantle of the sacerdotessa, which is, that word means the keeper of the sacred. So, yes, I have stepped into the leadership position. Well, I mean, I was in the leadership position with Raven, as he was, his title was sacerdote, and mine was sacerdotessa. So, yes, I am wearing that mantle, and I am functioning as the guide of that tradition. I feel very strongly that it's my position to be preserving and to continue our legacy. And I call it our legacy because we both evolved with that tradition and brought that forward. So yes, I took a year off, this year off, from offering the course of study so that I could bring everything up current. And I do have some initiates that are in training from last year, so I wanted to get them complete with their training before I offered it again. So, yes, it's vital, it's viable, and it will forever continue, because even when I'm gone, there are things in place that will help keep that tradition in its, you know, sacredness. You know, Raven and I were never about the numbers. It doesn't matter how many initiates we have, formally initiated into the tradition, because we found out through the years after Raven's, it actually started with Old World Witchcraft, his book, where he talked about Ash, Birch, and Willow and that. And then the following book, The Grimoire of the Thorn-Blooded Witch, then he talked even more about that tradition. So there are people that I have heard from who practice being a thorn-blooded witch of the old ways and following the ABW path without even being initiated. So I know that is going to be preserved and will be a part of whatever is going forward.
Now, I know you guys had an issue going on with your house. Were you able to get all the repairs made to your house? How's that going?
Yeah, the house was struck by lightning in 2017, and that was it turned out to be a double-edged sword.
Mm.
Yes, the third floor was the floor that was really affected by the fire. The second and the first floor were affected by the water, which the fire was fought by.
Right.
Because it just kind of, you know, they had to use so much water up on the third floor. It just kind of created this lake effect coming down the staircases. And I came down the staircase on the second floor, and it just kind of, you know, went into the arteries of the rooms. And then it went down, even down the rest of the staircase onto the first floor and did the same thing there. However, the first floor was not as badly affected as the other two were. So yes, our insurance paid for everything. It's amazing. I really got to put my fingerprint on the interior and the exterior of the house, because I got to choose all of the colors of paint for the rooms. I chose all of the wallpaper. And it was pretty much be done from top to bottom. Although it did take more, it took, I think, 4 more months than they estimated. Mm. It was really critical at the time. So it took 16 months altogether. And my concern was us getting back in the house before Raven passed, because he was pretty ill at that time. And unfortunately, when we did come home in October of 2019, no, I'm sorry, 2018, October of 2018, a month later, he went into hospice and pretty much didn't, you know, wasn't able to really enjoy the house that much. So
that was a shame.
Yeah, yeah, it really was. It was a really strange time for all of that to be occurring.
It struck me as odd that that would happen right at that
point in time. But I I'm glad that you guys have got it fixed, and thank God for insurance, right?
Oh yeah.
Well, thank the Lord and Lady for that one.
Well, originally when we first were buying the house, the insurance agent said, you need this policy because you will never, if anything happens to this house, you will never be able to replace the architectural things that are in the house because they're no longer available. And he was correct about that. So all of that was saved, though. That none of that was demolished or, you know, it was all just refurbished is basically what happened, the woodwork and such. So it's just, again, without hubris, I would say this is a magnificent home. And on that note, I'm now going to tell you about my big announcement.
Yes, want to hear it.
So because of my stepping forward and trying to really establish some sovereignty on all levels of my life, you know, I have turned the house into an Airbnb.
Oh.
And it's called the Legacy House, and it's on the Airbnb platform. But along with that, the most amazing thing happened for me when I decided that I'm also have turned it into the House of Grimassi Living Legacy Museum.
Oh, awesome. A twofer. Now I definitely have to get out to
New York. Yeah. It is a private museum. It will not be publicly, you know, will not be offered to the public.
Right.
However, the Airbnb is offered to the public, and the way I have the house set up, it's a no-brainer. People won't really be exposed to any of the witchcraft stuff that come that are non-magi, I would say. And then the people who do come that are involved in witchcraft, I have a very big surprise for them because I, on the third floor, along with the guest bedrooms and the full bath up there, there is a room that is the full width of the house. The full length of the house and half the width of the house. And that is what I call Sanctum Sanctorum. It's Raven's occult library.
Oh, wow.
And it has, he was a bibliophile. So he has an amazing collection of books covering amazing topics. And he's got first editions and first printings. And that will be made available to anybody in the craft who comes to stay. So let me tell you a little bit about the museum part of it.
Absolutely. We want to hear about that for sure.
So the first floor of the house, that is where the basis of the museum is, and in that room on the third floor. So I have a lot of objects there on the first floor, as well as a couple of cabinets that have, one of the cabinets is dedicated to all of his Strega collection of things that through the years that he's either practiced with or were gifted to him and made especially for him, things that are representative of that path, because that was a very important part of our lives. And I know it was a very important part of his life. It's kind of funny because out of all the books, I think he wrote 22 books, only two of them, well, three of them, including the self-published book, were about Italian witchcraft. The rest of them are all about the old ways of witchcraft and the mystery traditions. And yet he was known as the Italian guy, the expert in Italian witchcraft, which he was. He was the first witch to present a cohesive discussion about Italian witchcraft, and albeit in his book Italian Witchcraft, which first came out as The Ways of the Strega, mm-hmm. he had added some Wiccan elements to it to help the Wiccan. At that time, people were referring to themselves as Wiccans, not so much as witches and, you know, all of the terms that are known today. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but then it was Wiccans. For them to acclimate to the teachings of the Italian craft, because it is a fertility religion. And so there's a lot in there that it doesn't go against the Wiccan way, but it's different than the Wiccan way. And so he just added elements here and there so that people would feel more comfortable in reading it and being more receptive to it. And he is right up front about that in the introduction. He says that straight out. There's some Wiccan, you know, elements in here, and this is why I added them, et cetera, et cetera. So that cabinet contains a lot of that. And then there's another cabinet that has a lot of his personal mementos in it, from jewelry to, again, things that were near and dear to him, because he was a really interesting man.
Yes, he was.
Well, that's one of the things that I've come to appreciate during this last 2 years of having lost him, is that beyond him being all of the things that he was to me, you know, husband, friend, lover, teacher, I've come to appreciate the individual human being and seeing him in a very holistic way of honoring that character, that the quality of the character of this man and everything that he was and everything that he brought to the table, and really admiring the tenacity that he had in his desire to preserve and to talk about these old ways, because he and we, I would say, referred to ourselves as the root tenders. You know, that's where the old ways come in. And that's not to say that the new ways aren't valid, because one of the phrases that he coined was ever ancient, ever new. And that applies to the rooted things, which are down below, you know, in the earth, and their time-honored ways, and not to be forgotten because they nourish the tree. But in the middle world, where the tree's trunk is and it goes through the seasons and it, you know, it buds, it leaves, it produces the flowers, then it produces the fruits, and then the seeds again, which drop down into the earth. So it's all a process, and that to honor all of that, ever ancient, ever new, the things that are old and the things that are new coming together, because there's certainly an interconnectedness to that.
Absolutely. And that goes back to that thought about everything being a system.
Yes.
Cycles.
Yes.
I think one of the things that I appreciated about Raven was he was very approachable in
yes.
all different areas. You know, he didn't shy away from questions.
Nope.
He was very approachable to people that were reading his materials, even if you didn't agree with everything within it. You know, he was willing to debate and politely. You know,
yes.
some people get very defensive when you question something that they write or do, and you know, he was not like that, at least not with me. So I appreciated the fact that I could ask questions and he could come back with, you know, a pleasant response. And, you know, that's how you grow and that's how the community grows. But I want to know a little bit about you and your background. I'm very excited to hear about your plans. And now I'm definitely going to have to plan a trip to go to New England. I'm going to have to.
Well, let me tell you a little bit more about the museum. And I just want to speak to the last thing you said when you talked about his approachability. Mm-hmm. It was not his style to ever coerce or to try to shame anybody. He would stand by what he said, but he was reasonable in that he would, you know, contemplate things that were proposed, and he always came back, you know, with something that was nourishing and enriching in some way. And I really admired that about him too, because he's a kind man, you know, and he's, as I said before, his purpose was to help people grow and evolve and understand. It wasn't to make himself look bigger and better and a know-it-all. That was never who he was. And I will say this in all sincerity, that who you saw in the public was who he was at home. And who he was at home was who he was in the public. Yes, he was a little shy. However, when you got to know him, he had a wicked sense of humor, very witty and dry. And, you know, it's just, you know, he was one of a kind. What can I say? So
absolutely.
Then going back to, let's go back to the museum, and then I'll talk about myself, because myself is not, you know, whatever. So the rest of the part of the museum is on the first floor. I have lots of, again, I have his collection of first editions, because he was a collector of antiquarian books and, as I said before, first editions and first printings. And then there's some very unusual statues that he picked up along the way too. And then some of our tools. So I'll be doing different displays of different things during the year, you know, as time goes on. And then I changed one of the little rooms, it's a little parlor room, into a gift store, which also contains a lot of different memorabilia, as well as things that people might be interested in taking home with them. So the museum is going to be by appointment only. And here's the part that I would like to talk about too, is I started to do this project on Patreon as a membership, a private membership to support the museum, which transparency ultimately supports me.
Right, of course.
So I was working really hard to get that all in order, and it came time for me to build the tiers of membership. And I really struggled doing that on that platform. I just couldn't figure it out. And then all of a sudden it dawned on me, oh my gosh, I have my own platform. I have Raven's Law and the House of Grimace, my website, both of those websites. So the last 2 days, I just took everything and I shifted it over to Raven's Loft. So that is where, when people are going to be looking to see about the museum itself, where I have a mission statement about it. And then there's 5 levels of membership. And on each membership, I discuss what's available. So I'm hoping that people will see this as an opportunity to help continue to preserve Raven's work and the continuation of that. And also that it's a resource for community. You know, I really want to make it viable, because right before the pandemic started, I was holding workshops here, salons in the evening, once a month. And that went to the wayside because of the pandemic. So I'm hoping when things again open up, I'll be able to do that again, as well as host some other events here too. And as I said, the Airbnb is listed on the Airbnb platform as the Legacy House, if anybody wanted to look that up. And then they can see that things, and people can ask me questions. So that's my big news about doing that. And so then let's talk a little bit about me. So what do you want to know?
Well, you know, we know so much about Raven and his history because you felt it was important for him to document that.
Yes.
And so through your podcast, you did that. But we didn't get to hear a lot about Miss Stephanie Taylor and how you came into the craft and what your growth and your path was like. And I'd like to hear more about some more of your plans going forward, especially with regards to, you know, the Ash, Birch and Willow and kind of where you come from and what are you all about?
Well, let's see. I grew up in Southern California in a small beach town, Hermosa Beach, California. And I was a latchkey child. And because I lived so close to the ocean, that became a very nurturing environment for me. I would say that nature became really the nurturer of me, and I started to really respond to that. So that kind of started my interest in my relationship with nature. In my home life, when I was growing up, there was never any religion. There was never any doctrine ever talked about. It was a very bohemian lifestyle. My mother was a very interesting woman. She may have not been, June Cleaver, mm-hmm. whom I wanted but didn't have, but she was Gypsy Rose Lee.
Well, there you go. That is a very different kind of motherhood, isn't it?
What she did was she set an example for me to understand that there's no limitations to what a woman can do, and to remain a woman when you're doing it. And so she demonstrated. She was an actress in theater. She owned a coffee house at one time. She went on to work for a newspaper, where she started out selling classified ads, and then she moved up to be a receptionist for the publisher himself. And then she ended up becoming a photojournalist, which was what I really wanted to be. And she went out and she took photos of everything, murders, accidents, political events, everything. And then she became the editor-in-chief of 7 newspapers.
Oh, wow.
And then she ended her life by being the treasurer of the city of Hermosa Beach.
Oh, wow. She had a very accomplished life.
And she passed away when she was 59 years old.
That's very young.
Yes, but she lived large. And so she demonstrated that aspect to me, that, you could do anything. And so watching that model was very influential in the way that I would see the world, along with the natural world. And so I became interested in the equinoxes and the solstices. I was celebrating those when I was a teenager. I I would have never claimed that I was a witch, but I was very drawn to all of the mechanism of nature. And there was this fantastic bookstore in Hermosa Beach called the Either Or Bookstore. My brother and I, just this past week, were reminiscing about it, because you could go in there and, oh my God, the wafting of patchouli oil was just...
I love patchouli. I love that deep, earthy smell. I even put it in teas, and people are like, you can drink patchouli. Well, I do.
Oh my God. Yeah, I don't know if I do that. But
yeah, see, everybody, it was crazy.
It was definitely the scent of the decade of the 60s. So
yeah, oh, definitely.
I would go in this bookstore, and they had this little round room that had all of the occult books in it, astrology, psychics, everything, witchcraft, everything you could think of that was available at that time. And I would go in there and sit down, and my brother and I were talking about the grass mat that was on the floor. And I would sit there for hours and look at those books. And my mother was very interested in astrology and in psychics. So I was also exposed to that world as well at a very young age. So this was all kind of, I think, setting me up to have a predisposition to wanting to investigate more of that. And, as I started, maturing, I was still very drawn to that, and I was not drawn to the doctrines of any organized religion. In fact, I felt, if anything, that they betrayed people by the inequity of the wealth that I saw a lot of these people demonstrating during the time that I was observing that. And I just said, what's going on here? Why are these people living like this while their parishioners, or their congregation is struggling? Or, I just thought that was just very weird. I could not resolve
it. Very hypocritical.
I felt that it was, yes. And so I could not resolve that, to come to any terms with that. And so I wouldn't say that I believed in the monotheistic ideology of a God. However, I felt that there certainly was a greater presence than myself. And I found that in nature. I felt close to the divine, emanation in nature. I felt it wafting off onto me whenever I went out there. And I did a lot of hiking. I backpacked all over the Sierras, backpacked through Death Valley, backpacked through Western Europe. So, I mean, I had a lot of exposure to a lot of different things. And then as I was doing that and still, you know, finding my way, I never found a particular path that spoke to me until I would say probably the early 80s. And that's when I discovered Wicca. Mm-hmm. And I started reading books about that. And then a friend of mine that I met, she said, you know, she goes, I know this woman who I want to introduce you to. I think you'd really hit her off with her. I said, oh, really? She goes, yeah. She's a high priestess of a coven of witchcraft. And I said, really? And she goes, yeah. And I think you would really like that. So she ended up introducing me to my first high priestess. Her name was Mimi. And to the high priest, his name was Bill. And they had an Irish Celtic Wicca tradition, which was, it was a teaching coven, which was awesome because at that time, you know, I was in the learning mode. And so I became a part of that group and I really liked it. You know, we did rituals all the time. We met up. We had, you know, times when we would have teachings, but it left a lot of questions in my mind. One of them was, I felt this disparity in the idea that there was no mated pair of deity to go through the wheel of the year. What we used would be the different Celtic gods and goddesses who had similar energies, but weren't really companions on the path themselves. What's the word I'm looking for?
Like a consort.
Yeah, they weren't consorts. That's right. And so I really, you know, had an issue with that because the energies that were being brought in were not always had equal power to them. And I found that really, you know, weird, because in our tradition, although the god and the goddess, or the sacerdote and the sacerdotessa, we serve at different times of the year. The sacerdotessa runs the rituals of the cross quarters, and the sacerdote, he runs the rituals of the solstices and equinoxes, because they are solar, and the cross quarters for us are lunar. And so we go back and forth in our running the rituals, and we always worked in partnership, though. One always supported the other, no matter who was facilitating at the time. It didn't matter. They were equal in bringing what they had to bring to it. So anyway, so time went on when I was with this coven, and I was being groomed to take it over as the high priestess because she wanted to retire. Mimi was a little bit older, and wonderful, wonderful high priest and high priestess. Lovely, loving people, compassionate, wise, and I'm forever grateful for having been able to have, you know, my teeth first sunk into what they had to offer. But with this kind of, you know, feeling that there was just something missing, I went kind of looking elsewhere, and lo and behold, in San Diego, there was a store called Starcrafts, and it was owned by this young lady named Molly, who happens to be Maria Sims' daughter, and Maria Sims was a high priestess at that time and part of Astral Communications. She's written several books for Llewellyn Publications, and Molly had this store, and it was a craft store, a witchcraft store. So I went there regularly to get supplies, and one day when I went in there with a friend, there was an advertisement there for this series of lectures for the full month, like once a week for 4 weeks. There was this series being taught called Wiccan Mysteries. And guess who was the teacher?
So the teacher was, what if a woman named Raven Grimassi?
But the funny thing was, is I had the book, The Ways of the Strake, and I'm going, well, he's Italian and I'm not Italian. I don't think that this would work for me. And the girl behind the counter, she goes, no. So I was also believing what other people believe about Raven, that he was the Italian expert, but no. Wicked Mysteries was a fabulous book, still is a fabulous book, a little outdated for the times now, but you can't go wrong with what the information is in there. Yes, things have shifted a bit, but this is the way it was. And you, I know that there's, I'm not going to say a movement there, but there's a proclivity right now to disavow or disallow for what came before. But it is upon those steps that everything else has been built.
I was going to say that would be a mistake to deny that, because that's the foundation. And when you start chipping away at the foundation, the whole thing collapses.
I believe it does.
And you need to understand it may not be something you practice or follow specifically today, because it's a living way of life. So it will grow and it will change. But to understand those roots is to keep that foundation strong.
Absolutely. And there will always be nuggets that you can take away from that and you can apply it in present day practices.
Absolutely.
Things have shifted, but that, you know, you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. It's you're right. It's not wise to do that. So she said, oh, no, this is a series on the Wiccan mysteries. She goes, it's about Wicca. And I said, oh, okay. So I ended up going. And that's where I met him. And after the four classes, the four workshops that I went to, he and I struck up conversations. And I was talking to him about the coven that I was currently in and how I felt that that book, Wiccan Mysteries, really filled in a lot of the gaps. And I said, you know, of course,
I was going to ask you if it was love at first sight. Like, did you walk in and go, oh, my. Yeah. You know,
not at all. Because I wasn't available to do that at the time. That was not my mindset. However, everybody there said later that they saw this arc happen. Everybody said that this arc happened. And I said, really? They go, oh, yeah, you could definitely see this happening. So there you have it. So it could have been denial at the time because I was still married. He was married. And I was wanting out of this marriage for some time. So I will tell you more about that. So afterwards, I was talking to him about the Strega path, because I knew that that was what he did. And he said, you know, you don't have to be Italian to be a part of this tradition. I said, really? And so after reading the book, I approached him to ask if I could become a student. And after he interviewed me to make sure that there was, you know, it was appropriate, let's say, that right. I understood what they were teaching, that I understood the elements of the tradition, and that I would be starting from ground zero, because in this other tradition, I was a third degree. And it's not, you know, thank goodness they didn't transfer over. When I say they, the people that were part of the Italian tradition, it was called the Eresian. It was the Eresian tradition for us. That it didn't transfer me over from a third degree to a third degree in the Strega, because I would have been completely lost.
Well, it's a different foundational teaching. So
completely different system, completely different approach, still an interconnectedness, but the depth and the richness of it, oh my God, it is my heart. It still is my heart to this day. And Ash, Birch, and Willow really was a jump off point from the Strega. So he became my teacher. And that's where it started, was he became my teacher and my friend. And it was a month, I think, after I met him that I asked for a divorce. Because going on to become an initiate of, I already knew this, but this was the ultimate segue and opportunity for me to say, look, this is not working. I cannot live my bliss. I cannot be authentic about who I am, because the man at the time I was married to was not the right person in many, many ways. I'm not going to disparage him. He's the father of my child. There were opportunities and goodness part of the time, but most of the time, no, and that was the end of that. And so I just said I couldn't be dishonest and say I'm a part of this because he used to always say that witchcraft and what I, you know, reading the tarot and all those were my hobbies.
I hate that.
This is the heart. Yeah, this is my heart. This is who I am. I'm not going to deny it any longer. And when it finally came to the Strega path, we 6 months of the year, we are sky clad, and 6 months of the year, we are robed. And I could not, I mean, that ultimately was the last straw. I was not going to lie to him about being naked with other people. And he would have gone ballistic about that. So I never spoke about it to him. I just said, I want a divorce. It's done. You know, and I can't live my bliss with you. And that phraseology, by the way, comes from Joseph Campbell, the philosopher of the 20th century, one of the finest philosophers. In fact, he has this interview with Bill Moyers titled, what is it called? The Power of Myth. And it's a 6-disc. You know, you can download it now, but and he is also being thrown out with the bathwater now because they're saying that his viewpoint is outdated. Well, sure, again, it could be, but
there's always foundational nuggets of wisdom contained in those that can be carried forward.
I believe that there's an effort to devalue his perspective on the tarot and how he viewed the tarot as the journey of the hero. But if you watch these, they are fantastic. And like you said, these are nuggets of knowledge that have something in them for everyone. And it would be a crime to just say, you know, screw that, you know. I every time I think about this, and I really don't want to use this, but there's a lot of culture canceling going on.
Lots of it.
And it's wrong because all of these things are part of our history. And yes, some of them are ugly, but we can't eradicate them because they're ugly, because this is how things changed.
Exactly.
This is how transformation changes. When you have discomfort, you look at, wow, what is that thorn in my side? You don't just go, oh, yeah.
Right. Okay. You know, you don't just ignore it. Well, and like it or not, understanding that your history has some ugliness to it, it's like doing shadow work. Yes. You have to face that and say, yes, that was bad, but that's not who we are now. This is where we are at this point, and this is where we're going to. But if you try to deny or forget that, you're going to end up right back there.
Oh my gosh, Natalie, just think, if we went back thousands of years ago, we would be, I mean, in all of the things, the heinous things that were done, but also added to us, like you say, becoming more civilized, becoming, you know, evolutionized, and all of those things, without all that discourse or, you know, that trouble and challenge, we would not be where we are today.
No, we would not be.
And that is the same for the craft. It works in all areas of everyone's lives, in mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual. We must listen to that. We must participate. We must evolve and change, because if we are complacent, we are doomed to repeat the same things. And that goes for your personal life, in the choices that you make every freaking day. Okay. So, okay, going back to me, we digressed quite a bit.
A little bit there, yeah. Just a little bit. But that's okay, because that's how the conversation flows. So
I apologize for that.
You then became a student.
Oh, I became an initiate of the Strega path. And I went through that and became a third degree in that system. And then as time went on, we got together. We didn't have a coven. I was not in a formal coven in the Strega tradition, but in the area where we lived, there were third degrees, and we would often get together and do ritual. We did magic together. We had gatherings together. We would have teachings at the house where Raven would do what we call knowledge lectures on particular topics. And so we continued that for quite a few years. And then as we started initiating new blood into the tradition, into the Eresian tradition. And as time went on, at that time, there were things going on in society that were scaring people. One of those, and understandably, was
a big satanic panic.
No, it wasn't that. It wasn't.
No, I thought it was the big satanic panic of the 80s, because I was young when that was going on. And, I had an early interest in the craft and magic and things like that. But my mother was very much a don't even bring that stuff into my home kind of person. So I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
No, my mom would have totally embraced who and what I am now. She would have been encouraging to the nth degree. But no, it was more about going back to the sky clad part.
Gotcha.
People were very resistant to that. And I will say that had to do with some of the things that have happened in the craft, where there have been inappropriate sociopaths who have infiltrated and did harm people. Right. And that was understandable. But when when we started talking, just like Raven talked to me in the beginning, this is what we do, this is what happens, and part of the teachings of the tradition, which are Aradia's teachings, that your body is sacred, and that to be, to present yourself, in your natural state was a sacred thing to do, and that there was nothing wrong with that. But we had a lot of resistance to that, and some other parts of the tradition, which were sensual, but not out of line, not out of line. And
I think people confuse sensual with sexual. It doesn't necessarily mean the same thing.
That's correct.
One is an appreciation of the sensory aspect of the world itself, which comes from nature. I mean, think about how plants are in terms of a flower is very open with its sensuality, which is a part of its sexuality, but it's not entirely the sexuality of the plant. It's the same thing with us. It's just we've been trained by society to view sensuality and sexuality as one and the same when they are not.
Right. Well, and part of that came about because as I said earlier, the Strega tradition is a fertility tradition. And so the rituals are all based upon that cycle of birth, life, death, and renewal. And that is practiced throughout the year in every turn of the wheel. And so, for instance, with Lupercus, which would be the equivalent to Imbolc in Ashburton Willow, it's a hearth fire. It's all about purification. It's all about the primal essence of that time of the year when wolves are culling out the weak and the sick. And in the ritual there's scourging going on. And, that can be seen as something very, I don't want to say sadistic, but, in that auspice, and that is totally... You have to wrap your brain around the correct intent of what this is conveying. And it became very difficult to really convey that to people. So we just decided we were not going to do that anymore with the Strega tradition. And that is how Ash, Birch, and Willow evolved, was we decided to go back to the pre-Christian Western European ancestral enchanted worldview. I know that's a mouthful, but truly that's what it is, of how did our ancient ancestors view nature? What was the resonation with what was happening in nature? How did they define their relationship with the divine emanation? How did they view the times when they were in the forest, when you could hear things crackling and, at dusk things started to become shadowy and, what did all of these things mean? And by virtue of their living in these environments, all of these kinds of things developed, and not without an interconnectedness to it. These things were palatable to our ancestors and to us as well today. When I'm walking through the forest, it is alive. It is viable. It is wafting off it's the endorphins that it brings to us. It actually is scientifically proved that when you enter a forest, that the trees feel your electromagnetic energy, and they waft off their magnetic energy so that they calm us down, because they're, if for lack of a better word, I'm going to personify it, anthropomorphize it as saying they're afraid of us because of all of the damage that we've done and continue to do. And so they figure, oh, let's just drug them.
and they'll never know the difference.
That's right. Exactly.
And it almost sounds like a Star Trek episode. Paradise planet, you know.
Oh my God. Or even in Stargate, there was this episode where there were these magical people. Oh, I can't remember what they were called, but they were amazing. Their hair was all moss and it had flowers. And I mean, they could disappear. They were etheric. I mean, it was like the elder race. They could appear and disappear when they wanted to, because they weren't invested in, you know, in this lower density of existence, you know, this heavier energy that we, you know, that we have accepted as spiritual beings coming into this plane. We accepted that to come into these, what Raven would refer to as our deep diving suits. And it's true, because everything here is a lot denser and a lot heavier. And, you know, that keeps us here to do the work we need to do. So as far as Ashbertian Willow goes, that was the beginning of that. And Raven talks a lot about how that evolved in the grimoire of the Thorn-Blooded Witch. There's a lot of discussion in there about the mechanism of how we discovered our connection to She of the Thorn-Blooded Rose, to mandrake. I mean, I still have a mandrake that we planted with seed in California.
I was going to ask about your mandrake.
Yeah, we dug them up and we drove them with us across country. I still have mine, and it's in the museum, actually. It's a living mandrake specimen, my familiar. And it is now, I want to say, 20-some years old.
Wow.
And I haven't unearthed it for the last couple of years, because it's been leaf. It's been in leaf. And, you know, I don't want to do that. And right now it actually has, from, because the root is massive. I'm telling you, it's let me look at a ruler.
How big of a pot do you have to have for that mandrake at this point in time?
Well, I would say it's at least the pot's at least 12 inches in diameter, and it is probably 3 feet tall. However, since I haven't dug it up, I'm not sure how far it's grown down into that pot. But prior to that, I had it in a smaller pot. And what it does is, if you have it contained in a not a pot that has a lot of depth to it, it will tend to go horizontal rather than deeper. And the deeper is when you get the more humanoid form from it, with the, you know, roots looking like their limbs and other appendages that come off of the roots. But I'm not sure what it looks like right now, but it was at least, when I saw it the last time, it was at least 10 inches wide and probably 7 inches deep. I mean, that's how big the root is.
Wow.
It's massive. And I don't know the next time I'll be able to do that. What's interesting is that the leaves that are on it right now, it had two spots on the root where leaves have come out. It just started a third spot. So now I have this new rooted area. Well, actually, no, I won't say that. There are new leaves coming out of a different part of the crown. So I have three separate leafing entities coming out of the crown right now, which is fascinating, because three is such a magical number, manifestation. So I find that interesting.
You are manifesting a lot right now.
I know, that's what I mean. That's what I mean.
Being that it's your familiar, it must be a physical output of your manifestation.
Oh, yeah, because I utilize it a lot. I am very connected to that. And putting it in the museum was, I think, very, very good idea. And I talk to it all the time. I praise it. I thank it. I have gratitude for the blessings that I feel in my relationship, the rapport that I've developed with that, how it works with me in common cause, because I believe that working in common cause with nature is one of our essential mandates of being a witch, working in common cause and stewardship with nature, participating with nature. When we do that, we avoid being thought of in our thoughts as victims, because if we're participating, then we're making mindful choices. We're putting our attention in the best possible avenues of our lives, so that again, when we're making these mindful choices, they are moving us forward into the best possible life that we can have, notwithstanding challenges, because again, inertia brings, you know, it's not good for us necessarily. Yes, we can have, like today, I took the day off. My day off is, my biggest thing today was spending it with you in this interview, and this is lovely. Absolutely.
I'm so excited. I feel like I should have a cup of tea and
we should.
Wine. I should have gotten my wine.
That would have been fantastic. In fact, I have this beautiful collection of English teacups, which I will be featuring at one time as part of the house itself, because I'm going to be doing part of the tiers. I will be doing videotapes here in the house of different parts of the museum, and also taking still photos, which I have in the last year. I posted quite a few of them on Instagram. So that was like a little sneak preview, because I was using the hashtag Living Legacy. Now maybe people will kind of go, oh, that's what that meant, the Living Legacy. Yes. Now we have the Living Legacy Museum. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Perfect.
So, and the Legacy Airbnb, the Legacy House. So, with Ash, Birch, and Willow going forward, again, you know, I am not a big, what do I want to say? I'm not big on advertising. I am big on people who are seeking their spiritual path, and if they've read those books, or they've seen a podcast, like listened to a podcast like you said, or they've come to a workshop, somehow they've been exposed to the material and they have an interest in pursuing that, then that's the beauty of the, you know, of the path itself.
To those who need it and who are ready for it, I think.
Yes.
Advertising is not necessarily necessary.
Right. And I will say my initiate body has, it's now at, I think there's 32 initiates. At one time there might've been 45. And the other beauty of this is that being the sacerdotessa of the tradition, it is my job to guide and to teach those who this path resonates with. If it, for some reason, this has taken a different turn for you, you need to follow that. There's nothing keeping you here but yourself and your own interest in pursuing these teachings. You are not a captive. You are not a prisoner. There is no disgrace. Unless you're doing harm, then that's a different story. But if you are just, you found that this is no longer working for you, you found yourself going back to your old path where you felt more comfortable, hey, good for you. And that is okay. And for any initiate who comes in, new initiate in particular, there is a 6-month probation period to really kind of acclimate themselves to whether or not this was really going to work for them, because there's 12 months of training. And to be perfectly honest, that I would say most of the initiates who are in the tradition have been in it for, I'm going to say, excluding the new initiates, I'm going to say for at least 5 years, and they are all first level still. There is no guarantee to your elevation. There are no covens. They're actually, we don't call them covens, we call them groves because of our connection to the Greenwood realm. There are no groves. There are only two second level priestesses. And there's, granted, I will say that in the last 5 years too, that was during the whole time Raven was ill. And then the 2 years that I've taken to, reacclimate myself in life. So there's not really been anything going on in that way. And yes, initiations do, in-person initiations is required at some point if you want to go to a second level. And that means you have to come to me here at the House of Grimassi, and the timing has to be appropriate. And my priestess has to be here to help me facilitate the initiation. I cannot do it alone. It takes two of us to do it. So that is a stipulation that's a little, I'm not going to say it's frustrating, but it's certainly...
It could be inhibitive for people that are not in a position to be able to travel great distance or...
Well, yes and no. Because in the old ways, if you wanted it bad enough, you would do
it. You made it happen, right?
You made it happen some way. And there's actually been discussion about that where there have been some other arrangements that have been proposed to be made for the West Coast, because that's where my priestess lives. And she has, she has her home. It's all set up. It's imbued with ABW. So in effect, I could go there and we could do them there for West Coast people. Now, with that being said too, with these initiates who have been continuously participating, have been loyal, have been supportive, that speaks to the tenacity of their dedication to their understanding of the teachings, not to me. Because when you take an oath, your oath is not to Stephanie or the Satra Dottesa. I am a witness to that. I witness your oath being made to the divine and to the entities that are part of Ash, Birch, and Willow. And that is my role, is as witness. Yes, I pass something to them, but again, that is coming through me from divine emanation. That is not me. That is not something I am personally bestowing on them. It was bestowed to me. And this is part of the teachings. I don't know if you've read What We Knew in the Night, but Raven talks about that in there and the sacredness of that passing, let's say, of the light, that's all I'm going to say about that. However, it's very important. It's a very important connection and conduit that needs to be established. And I can firsthand speak to that with the Strega initiations that I have had and the initiations of Ash, Birch, and Willow I've had, which were given to me by Raven myself, to me. And that again was, something I don't talk about. However, it's there. It's real. It's authentic. And I will go to my grave knowing that. It's very emotional for me right now to say this.
I understand completely. And I can't tell you how much it means that you are being so open, because I know this cannot be easy for you. So again, I just want to thank you for allowing myself and my listeners to be in some small way a part of this intimate aspect of your life. I mean, it's an honor.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, every time I'm at the altar, I have a picture of Raven there, and he had a raven call, like they have, the duck calls.
Mm-hmm.
He has a raven call, and I call him to my side every time I stand in front of that altar, and I know that he is there beside me. And that is very, very comforting. And I know that library, I know that is where he resides, because in real time, he would have loved that to be in his library to work in. Oh my gosh.
Right. A workspace. I bet that would have been amazing.
I'll tell you, everybody who walks into that room, whether they are craft or not. They say, oh my gosh, this energy in this room is amazing. I said, it is. It's got this quality about it that's unexplainable. Well, you know, well, we know as witches it's explainable, but you know.
Right, but to others, they just think it, but they don't.
I use that for effect, you know, to say unexplainable. They
understand the same way, exactly. No, definitely. I mean, because, you know, you know it when you walk into it. You can feel that shift.
Oh, yeah.
So for sure, for sure. Well, let me ask you this question. If you had to pick one, just one of Raven's writings, what would be your favorite book that he's ever written? What do you think would be the pinnacle and the epitome of Raven Grimassi?
Oh, well, I'm going to say two. Okay. Two books.
Now, wait a minute. The rule was just.
I know, but it's hard because they both feel a different quality of the path. But I want to say What We Knew in the Night, his last book, that is an amazing effing book. When he talks about the quintessential elements of witchcraft, I will tell you that he, before he crossed, he took me through all five of those himself. And he did it when he was feeling at his best. And it was significant. And what he has in that book, I believe, are some of the most valuable words of knowledge that he expressed. And I'll also say this. Sometimes people have criticized him for having written or repeated some of the same teachings in his books. However, when he did that, they were in a different context. And here is why. The teachings are the teachings. From him, they were the rooted teachings. They were worth repeating in a different context because that is how the mysteries are revealed. They are revealed in different ways at different times. And when you read them, something else clicks. I've read those books and something else clicks all of the time.
Right.
I mean, it's just, that's the way the mysteries are. And if I were going to say that he was a mystery revealer because it was his duty to unravel them. And that was one of the reasons why he did so much research, because he was just, he had a mind that just had to, you know, just take things apart and then put them back together again. And that was what he was really good at. And then he was really good at telling us about how he did that and then how to access it ourselves by describing these techniques and these mechanisms that were there. And that's why explaining them over and over again is important. And I say that about the teachings are the teachings are the teachings, because he wasn't reinventing things. He kept telling you, look, this is what it is. This is what it is.
I know that he was a very big stickler for foundational teaching, that he felt a lot of the solitary practice that went on and people picking up a book, which of course, you know, the irony there is that the books people were picking up, some of them were his, but yes. He was very much about, we need to get back to what is the foundation of witchcraft and what makes us all witches, regardless of tradition or origin of practice, and that there are certain foundational teachings. And I know he was a big stickler. So that was book one. What was your second choice?
The second would be Witchcraft and Mystery Tradition, which is a fabulous, I really like that book. And one of the concepts that he presents in that book, which I find really is important and valuable to people, is he has the consort of the gods, the goddess and the gods, going through the wheel of the year with titles, which are such as, let's start with what most witches and Wiccans refer to as Samhain. At that time of the year, it's the Lady and the Lord of Shadow. And then from there, during Yule, it's the Lady of the Womb and the Lord of Rebirth. And then it goes on to the Lady of Fire, the Lord of Ice. the Lady of the Lake to the Lord of the Reeds, to the Lady of the Green and the Lord of the Green, to the Lady of the Flowers and the Lord of the Woods, the Lady of the Fields, the Lord of the Barley, and last, the Lady of the Harvest and the Lord of the Sheep. And then we start the wheel again. But this takes us through the, it is agrarian. However, that is the emanation of nature. And if we use that as a metaphor for our own lives, we can be just as productive as nature is in that cycle. And so I thought, I just found that to be so valuable, because
very profound in its simplicity, which is,
yes,
I think what makes that a gem of its own.
Yes. You
know, we have so much to learn from nature, and getting back to that, you know, it nature never holds on to what no longer serves it. And someday that's going to include us, unfortunately.
Because it's birth, life, death, and renewal. And, you know, nature is the emanation of the divine blueprint, Natalie. I mean, that is its purpose. It is the roadmap. It is the blueprint. It is, look at me. Look, I mean, he's got this thing called the teaching of the tree. And you know what? I think that might be in witchcraft and mystery tradition, where he's talking about the tree through all of the seasons is rooted. And it can, you know, it goes through the cycles of its existence without railing against nature, without railing against winter, without railing against its losing its leaves, without, you know what I mean?
It just is. It's an acceptance and an adaptation to what nature requires.
And that goes along with the ebb and flow of life, with the challenges, you know? One of the phrases that Raven liked to use, and I say where I knew it came from, Raven quoted to me, was from William Gray's book. I think it's Western Occult, the Western Inner Workings, and it's looking for a perfect peace profound, which I define in my worldview as, you know, one of those clowns that used to blow up, and they had like a weighted bottom.
Yes. So I had one of those, punched a hole through it.
Okay. Well, that's not a good example of what I want to say, but here's
but I know what you're talking about, the little punching bags.
Okay, so you would punch it, but the thing would come back, right? It comes right back up. So it's
unless you sat on it.
What?
Unless you sat on it.
Oh my God. Okay. So let's erase that. Let's go back to my metaphor. So you're punching it and it comes back. You're punching it and it comes back. That is the, you know, that's a metaphor for us. You know, you don't let things, because that's when you become the victim, is when you stay down. Okay, that thing, it lost air because you punched a hole in it, or you sat on it and lost air, so it's not going to inflate again.
Right.
You don't stay in that place. You accept, you acknowledge, and then you step right back into your worldview and stay focused on what is mindful and what you want to put your attention on that has worth and value to you, you know.
Absolutely. And I think that's an extremely profound thought that's lost in a lot of the teachings, that you know, they don't get to the root of that as much as some of Raven's work does. And I appreciated his need for foundation, his understanding that roots were what kept witchcraft alive all this time, because even when it looked dormant, it was still alive and growing and living beneath soil to return to the surface as a newly transformed tree, really. Awesome. So it was appreciated, I think. Now, do you plan to begin writing yourself? Are you going to be putting out any new works in that regard, or are you choosing to take your gifts in another direction?
Oh, no. You know, I'm getting an echo now. Do you hear it?
I'm not hearing it.
Oh, good. Okay, because I can hear it on my end. Anyway, yes, I am going to write a book. I already have started it. And it'll be from my spiritual perspective. And, you know, your perspective is defined by your perceptions of the world around you, which are through your senses. And, of course, for us, the sixth sense of intuition comes into play as well. So I'm taking what I have learned through my life experience, and I want to bring that forward into a writing. I'd also like to write a book on the mandrake. I want to call it The Company of Mandrake, you know, because mm-hmm. it's accompanied me for so many years. And so, yes, I will be doing that once I can get financially stable. I'm going to say that because that's really part of what's, you know, what I'm needing to do after even having crossed the veil. Struggled a little bit with that.
Well, there's always a period of adjustment, especially when, you know, the income has been two part, now it's one. So
exactly.
It does shift. Absolutely.
Yeah. And, well, and then, of course, the world's changed so much, too, in the last years with the pandemic, that that's really kind of, I mean, it's changed the way everything works. And
absolutely, it has.
So, yeah. And when you asked about a podcast, yes, I would like to do a podcast, and I probably will. And it will probably be, you know, coming from the House of Grimassi. Right now, I'm actually having the House of Grimassi website completely overhauled. And I'm very, very excited about that.
Yeah, super excited to see the new format.
Yeah.
When will that be going online?
Pardon me?
Do you have an estimate on when that would be going online, or when the new...
The House of Grimassi is up and going. It's just
right.
It hasn't been updated for so long. In fact, I'm going to put a sign up there that says it's under construction. I'm thinking that maybe late May, early June, it'll be ready to launch.
Oh, very soon. Good.
Yeah. Good. It's being worked on right now. But the museum itself, that's today. That's his birthday on April 12th. I thought it would be very serendipitous, as well as honorable and commemorative in his, you know, in his honor, to launch the House of Grimassi Living Legacy Museum.
Absolutely. And I'm honored that you chose my podcast to announce that on. So I'm super stoked. I hope maybe we'll be able, for those of us that financially are not able to travel at this point in time due to the pandemic and everything else going on, that we might see a video tour of, you know, a mini tour of it, or some visible embodiment to be able to go, oh yeah, I'm gonna get there.
Well,
the manifestation when you can visualize. So
well, I'm hoping that people will take the opportunity to look at what I'm offering as far as membership. It's a private membership to the House of Grimassi. As I said, it's a private museum. It won't be publicly
right.
It won't be out to the public. And there's different levels of support. There's monthly, and then you can pay annually, but in those tiers, there is the video that I'll be shooting.
Good. Okay. So that's an option, and it gives us an opportunity to support you, which I think is very important.
Thank you.
As well. So it definitely.
I'm excited too, to be talking about the things that I'll be sharing videos about, as well as still photos, where I will be talking about whatever I am I'm showing you at the time too, you know, little snippets of all different kinds of things. And yeah, it's that, I like that because it's a creative outlet for me as well.
Absolutely.
And I'm sharing, you know, I'm sharing things about my life and his life. And I think it's really, it's fun and, you know, interesting. So I hope other people will think so too.
Well, I am certain that they will, and I'm excited to see more of what you're going to bring forward. Because, you know,
I'm excited to see what I'm going to bring to.
I'm really excited to see where that's going to go. I'm excited to see where I'm going to go today. But you have so much to offer on your own. And again, I think when you're with someone who would be considered a living legend as Raven would, that sometimes those that are the force behind or next to or with, I would say, not so much behind, but next to, get lost in the shadow. So it's exciting to see you step forth and blossom into your role in the craft, because I think that a lot of times you might have been the power behind the power, and that gets forgotten. And I think it's important to acknowledge and recognize that, and see where you take House of Grimassi in future. I know that your time is very valuable, and I want to go ahead and tell you that I very much appreciate it. Do you want to share the websites with the audience so if they want to go and join that membership level where they can go to do that?
Mm-hmm. Now, you can go to www.ravensloft.biz. And when you are on that homepage, on the left-hand side, there are the department categories. On that side is the it says Living Legacy Museum. If you click on that, it'll take you to the page on the website where you can read about the museum. And then you can read about the levels of membership options. And also in the future, and not quite yet, but I'm going to be very happy to be able to announce when the launch of the new House of Gramasi website will be. And that's just www.houseofgramasi.com. So those two things are happening. And then, I'll, of course, on Facebook, I'll be announcing that on Facebook today.
Well, excellent. Well, thank you again, Miss Stephanie, for... giving us the honor of your presence on the podcast and for sharing with us all of the exciting new changes and upcoming things that are coming for you. And we look forward to seeing more from you.
Well, thank you. And it's been, you know, it's been an honor that you have honored me with having me on. And it was an honor for me to stand beside that man and to enable him to be all that he could be during his lifetime. I mean, I really want that to be known that I admired him greatly. And thank you so much for encouraging me and, you know, really supporting me and having confidence in me, because that is part of what's, you know, really making me step forward and to really embrace, you know, finding me. So thank you so much, Natalie, for this opportunity.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Yay.